Welcome back to the show, and we're now joined by, well, he's a legend, officially, in the Australian Football Hall of Fame, inaugural coach of the Giants, and we know what he achieved as a coach of Essendon, a player at Richmond, amongst many, many other achievements in an incredible resume. Kevin Sheedy is joining us. Kevin, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Morning, everybody out there in Sydney. How are you guys? Very good to be on the show and speak to you.
Yeah, great to speak to you as well. We appreciate your time, and particularly leading into Anzac Day, and Collingwood and Essendon in particular. And I'd love you to tell our listeners how you came up with the idea of Essendon and Collingwood playing annually on Anzac Day. I think it was back in 1994 where this came into being.
Well, I've been aching at me a little. I was in the army, boys, and I was down at Milperra in southwest Sydney, and I'm the School of Military Engineering, and I was in the army for a couple of years and coached the boys that come back from Vietnam. So, and I didn't go to Vietnam, so I always promised them I would do something for them if I ever got to a chance to be able to do that. And so, in the end, you know, there's only about 7,000 people turned up at the Shrine in Melbourne one Anzac Day morning, and that sort of got up my goat a bit. So I went and saw the president, Mr. Ruxton, and threw an idea at him. And to be honest, he enjoyed it. And the rest is history, to be honest. I picked Collingwood mainly because they lose. And he said, that's a great idea. But they lose, but they turn up. And they're unbelievable fans of Magpies. You know, they've won three premierships, I think, since 1960, and they get the greatest crowds ever. So sometimes they're like that, aren't they?
They are, Sheeds, and it's just become one of the great games on the sporting calendar, hasn't it? Because there's always so many people there, 90 to 100,000. Hopefully a very competitive game this year. But to sit back and see how far that has come from the start, you must be extremely proud.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, look, you don't know how things are going to happen when you put an idea up, and particularly when you're dealing with defence forces and the RSL and that sort of thing. But you know, we know our boys struggle, men and women, when they come back from the desert wars, particularly of late. And we've got to make sure that everybody's understanding and caring about their performances in the war zones, you know.
And, Sheeds, we've just had Daniel Lloyd, the assistant coach of Brisbane, on earlier, and we were talking about the start they've had to the season. Coaches now, well, not now, the coaches have always been under pressure on their results, but what would you say to coaches who come under the microscope? How do you hold your nerve when the pressure's white hot?
Oh, you got to throw a bit of humour in it, I reckon. You know? Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, I mean, I lost 240 games as coach of Essendon. I drove home losing 11 years. And you want to make sure you've got a comedian as a good mate, you know. But I think in the end, you just got, I mean, we got to nearly 10 grand finals in the first 20 years. We got to 7 and missed a couple by a point, one of them up in Sydney, where the Swans were oldest by only like a kicking a point after the siren. But that's how tough this game is. It's got tougher, actually. And so I think, you know, because we've actually developed more teams in the AFL, so the talent base has thinned out a little bit. So you've really got to be smart now as a coach, I think, more than ever, to make sure that whatever talent you've got, particularly through the draft, which is sort of a recruiting zone that you guys don't work through. But the drafting is very difficult because, you know, probably the AFL, if you were looking back at politics, it's a very socialistic system. You know, if you win, you get the last pick in the draft, sort of, you know. Mm. Very hard for coaches.
It's a cutthroat industry, Sheeds, and we know that. But are you a big believer in giving coaches time when they first come to a club to develop their own system and style, or are you one?
I do, yeah. I do. Yeah. I personally do. At least we've found that in the last sort of, I reckon 20-odd years, maybe 20 years, the coaches that got past 5 years without a premiership finally got one in the seventh year about, you know.
Yeah.
There have been a couple of lucky ones. I think Chris and it's a long got a premiership in his first year when Mark Thompson left and left him with a pretty good list. So I think Johnny Longmire got one in his second year.
Yeah.
So that's pretty fortunate. Last year, you've even seen McRae win a premiership in his second year. So, and I think the Giants coach, Adam Kingsley, got within 1 point of a grand final in his first year. So they're magnificent achievements for these coaches.
Yeah. Oh, they certainly are. Oh, and when you looked at talent, mate, what was a player, I should say. Was it talent that you looked for? Was it the attitude you looked for? Was it their competitive nature? What was the sort of overriding thing that you looked at and went, yeah, I think I can do something with him?
I think most top-class sportsmen and women have got great attitudes. And the best attitude wins most times. They've all got a lot of different arrays of talent. Mm. But I reckon if you've got a great attitude, I reckon it makes up for just a touch less talent. And you work with the team and the coaches' staff, and you get the best out of yourself. And a lot of Swans players are very good like that. I mean, the Giants have really picked it up in the last few years. I mean, you know, they've nearly been in 3 grand finals in 10 years. Well, that's unheard of in AFL. Unheard of. And they're probably a big chance to get there this year after missing out by a kick last year. So they're getting the best out of their players. Their attitude seems to be spot on. You're going to need the talent because they're freaky sort of players.
Yeah.
You don't have Billy Slater rolling into your club or, you know, Dusty Martins. You know, they just come to the fore. They rise to the occasion on big time matches, finals and so forth, State of Origin, that sort of thing. But, you know, across the board, I would say if you've got an average attitude, you're probably never going to get the best out of yourself.
I was going to ask you about GWS, Sheeds. As the inaugural coach, you pretty much got the responsibility to put the air in the footballs, starting a club from scratch. How do you think the club is tracking? Is it where you thought it would be at this stage of its life?
I would think most people in football, AFL football around Australia, think that they've done a marvellous job with Tony Shevin and Matthews as a CEO, and David. They've nearly got to, they've got a chance to get there this year. They could nearly do first, second or third in 4 times in 10 years if they get there this year. So no other club in AFL history has ever been that good so quickly. And look, in the end, we started training at Greystanes in a park out there, Mark Williams and I. And when we got out to Black Cam, we were training with sort of like army camp rooms. And I said, well, to get over it, I mean, you know, being 2 years in a hut in the army was, you know, it was pretty handy for me to handle that sort of stuff. So we come from a very tough, awkward upbringing you had to be that in Sydney and the West, in Western suburbs, particularly in the early days where these kids come from all over Australia. They're not local New South Wales boys playing for a rugby league team. They come from Darwin, they come up the Northwest Passage up in Perth, West Australia. They come from down Tasmania, little clubs. So when you get them and you get them into a group, you've got 100 people you've got to put in and be like a little army camp, really. That's the way I saw it.
Now, talking about bringing players in, Sheeds, when I knew you were coming on the show, I did a little bit of research, and I need you to confirm or deny this, but I believe the Olive Branch...
I deny it.
Smart, very smart. But you're one of the greats, and greats always think outside the box. I believe that you may have extended an Olive Branch to the great Laurie Daly a few years ago between the ARL and Super League days to come in and train.
I was always looking. Remember, I did... I'll take anybody, I'll be honest. I'll take anybody.
Clearly.
I'll take anybody. I mean, look, we just had to take Izzy Folau in the end because I think he might have been a touch younger. But, you know, Izzy Folau was a fantastic young person. You know, he played for us. And you know how good that guy was. He actually came up and said, look, I don't deserve this money. I really feel embarrassed about
it. He took it, though.
Well, he left and went for less money to rugby, I think it was it?
Yeah.
Anyway, but he bought his mum and dad a house, and I thought, well, how good's that guy, you know? And I know, you know, lots of things have been said about lots of people in the world of sport, but I thought he was a pretty damn good person, to be honest.
And so what was the story with Laurie? You opened the door, said, come in and train. Did you have a position earmarked for him?
I think Andrew Demetrio, the head of the AFL, said, no way known is that person ever going to play. I thought God had spoken from the heavens. But look, we were trying to get everything right down in camera, so we'd take everybody from anywhere, you know.
Brilliant.
Yeah, no, it's good fun. But you guys are going well up there. I mean, you know, you've been fantastic with all the racing and all the sport and the NRL and you know, the game over in America must have been exciting for the game. I'd love to sit down with a few NRL boys and say, how did it go? What was it like? Because I'm pretty good to help get the Giants, David Matthews and the boys. I'd love to see the Giants play the first AFL game for 4 premiership points in California from Cairns. And as soon as an Indians build their cricket ground, hopefully we're in. Okay, so we'll tail you in, and we need to find out what it was like over there. I don't think we'll be playing in Las Vegas. I think that's where you played, was it?
We were, Chutes. Hey, how did the AFL approach you? Because you've come up with all these ideas and concepts that you've got. Do they give you the time and respect, or they just go, oh, this isn't just another idea from Sheeds?
They do a bit of that. Yeah. You know, but every now and then I think to myself, well, you don't like it, I'll just ring up the NRL, they'll like it. To me, it's about getting things done. I mean,
it's
the biggest problem sometimes we tend to forget, I don't know what happened in Sydney, but I'll be honest, this is what happened in Melbourne. The MCG was only used for 18 days a year for 100 years. And that's pathetic. There was 9 games for the Melbourne Football Club, 4 VFL finals, and 5 days for the Boxing Day test. Now, I don't count Shield cricket because you need 35,000 to open the gates to make a dollar. So how do you actually get that 2 hours more exciting in a fantastic stadium? And that's what the concepts really are about, filling the stadium, getting bums on seats, and letting everybody have a better chance to see a great game from a better stadium than the daggy old grounds we had when we played, you know, in the 70s.
Just on the field so far this season, who's really sort of stood out for you? And I guess I want to ask you specifically about Harley Reid as well, who's 6 games into his career over there at West Coast. And what impression has he made on you, Sheets?
He's going to be... There's a couple of blokes, Horne Francis, he's going to be a great player like Reid. There's 2 of them, I reckon, him and the boy Port Adelaide here. They tore Essendon apart a couple of weeks back, and... there's 2 or 3 at Port Adelaide, great midfielders. And that boy, we go to play West Coast in a couple of weeks, so I'm going to get a better look at him. And I think it's just great to see exciting talent coming along, whether it's NRL, soccer, rugby. I love to see all the greats come along as young kids and do really, really well. And that's what makes us tick as a country, mate. We're the only country that's got 4 football codes in the world. Yeah, it's just quite amazing. We deliver a menu for our parents. Well, which code do you want to play? We've got 4 here, and you go for it. I love that part.
Yeah. We've got a question here on expansion, Sheeds. Can you ask Sheeds where he'd like to see where the 20th team comes from? Asks Noodles.
Oh, it's either Newcastle or Canberra. They're both hanging around 450,000 population. They'll be the next 2 major cities in Australia that would get 1 million people, okay? And you'll need that 1 million people in 25 years' time. So I think if our immigration stays the way it is, bringing people in, which we need more people, obviously, but we've got good ones all the time.
Yeah.
But I think Newcastle and Canberra are the 2 that I would look at after Tasmania. I'm not quite sure whether Darwin's got enough people.
Would you be open to New Zealand, Sheets?
That wouldn't mind me. I've been over there a couple of times. Yeah. No, New Zealand's great. They've got a population about 4.9 million. Yeah, I love all... It's where the people are. There was football played before the war in New Zealand. It was one of the major football codes, to be honest. But the Second World War just obliterated the players. Mm. Yeah.
How's your horses going? Well, you still got any?
I have a Bella Street, Sire of Black Caviar. We had a great lot of all that stuff. We've got a couple of little fox wedges in the paddock with one of our 4 board members of the Giants. Actually, I went up and saw it Saturday, and nice 2-year-old. We won't race it till 3. And he's a bloodline to Ballasbury, Black Caviar and Moshe, which is Moshe is Black Caviar's full brother. So they're down that line of bloodlines that we put into a fast net rock stand called Foxley. Yeah, so, well, look, we'll see how we go in 5 years, but when you're turning 77 this year, you want to make sure you're around 5 years. So that's what you've got to do.
Sheeds, it's been great to talk to you. And enjoy Anzac Day in particular. I'm guessing you'll be there, of course, at the MCG.
Yeah, mate, I would have the busiest week coming up of all time. As soon as I get off your show, I'm out, and I probably won't see my wife for another 5 days. I'm not sure how you would see that comment. I'm not upsetting my wife as she walks through the door, so I better shut up. But the deal in the end is I'll enjoy it because I know it's for the right reason. That's to celebrate our men and women in defence.
Great stuff. Really appreciate your time, Kevin.
No worries, guys. Thank you very much.
Give us a call, 1353 53, on the text line 0419 767 272. Cowra from Forestville says he's off to the Tamworth Cup on Friday. Can Loz do some form for me and give us a tip Friday morning? I'll be listening on the drive up for the Tamworth Cup.
Cowra, I will. There you go. I love that when people text in and ask me to do things for them.
Do you really want Loz's tip for the Tamworth Cup?
Of course he does.
That's what you've got to really start asking.
We didn't
yourself.
Actually ask for the Tamworth Cup. He's heading up there for the Tamworth Cup, so it could be anywhere on the program.
Oh, okay, right.
That's the way I read it. Am I wrong?
Well, I mean, it's open to interpretation, isn't it, Loz? So I just assume driving up for the Tamworth Cup, that's what he'd like a tip for. But
well, I'll do a bit of research on the plane on Thursday on the way down to Adelaide.
Ahead of watching Foxy race on Saturday, obviously.
Yeah, that's the number one reason I'm going down.
Any stable mail at this point?
Nothing as yet.
No. Okay.
We'll wait and see, Mitter. We'll wait and see what happens with the barrier draw, and hopefully everything's going to plan, and she'll travel across, and she'll be ready to run.
Give her strength. The Queen of the South on Saturday, Foxy Cleopatra. I'm not sure there's a... Let me have a look and see if there's a futures market for that race. No, there's not.
I saw one yesterday.
Oh, yeah, here it is.
Yeah,
no,
$13. Bucks. Should be $13.
Foxy's $13, $4 the place in a very open all-in market with Tab, Campionessa and Sione, $5 at the top of the market, all-in. Foxy Frida, $6.50. So there is a market there in the futures for racing. Foxy Cleopatra, $13 and $4 the place for the Queen of the South in Adelaide on Saturday. Team lists later today in the NRL for this week, and it's been reported that Damien Cook, who we'll have on the show tomorrow, of course, will be back in the 17 for Souths. Big Anzac Day match against Melbourne at Amy Park. Storm $1.24, Souths $4.10 plus $13.50. Big outsiders. Jai Arrow, also expected to return from injury for the Bunnies, Loz.
Oh, it gives them a bit of punch through the middle. And they need all hands on deck, don't they, South Sydney? Because their form at the moment's been ordinary, to say the least. You could argue they were a lot better against the Sharks before the bye. But they're under pressure, and they've been out of the spotlight. So they've been able to go away, work on and address the areas of the game that need working on. Cookie comes back into the squad. I give them a chance down there in Melbourne. I won't be tipping them, but I do give them a chance because I think that at some stage this squad is so talented or too talented not to deliver a performance.
Plus 13.5, I'm definitely tempted in for that game.
Well, the Bulldogs nearly beat them, and I know they're playing. Bulldogs are playing better than Souths, but I see Souths with a bit more strike.
Jeez, you're... As far as you're tipping on the text line, Loz, I just got distracted there.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness, Laurie. Tamworth Cup tip. You couldn't tip a waitress, says
name
to that. That's quite harsh. Hey, Loz, can you also do me a favour and not in capitals, give a tip out, says Josh.
Josh, morning, gents. I know Josh. I know Josh will want me to tip because he'll want to know what I'm tipping. Even if they bag me, they want to know.
Well, on that,
they just want to know. They just want to know.
Morning, gents. I'd love to be hearing Laurie's tip for the Tamworth on Friday. After hearing it, I'll put the red pen through it, says Matt at Balgala. Just harsh, aren't they?
They don't see me on a Saturday when I'm high-fiving and cheering and people are putting me on their shoulders and carrying me out of the Northbridge Hotel.
Keith and Cumming, Sione will give Foxy windburn as she flies past her, says Aaron. Ouch. Just on team lists as well, is it an inevitable loss that Clint Gutherson, well, Buzz said it on Fox League last night, Clint Gutherson, according to Buzz, it's pretty much coming up that he's going to be moved into the halves, if not this week, then quite soon. They're at Parramatta and Blaise Talangi could end up there at fullback. And part of the reason is as well is just Gutho's, you know, knee. So I think he had it drained again last week.
Right. Is this an ongoing issue for Gutho's knee's longevity, or is it more just a short term? Because I think they possibly need him to be in the 5'8", in the halves role, because I think with him being there, with his voice, he'll give good direction. And I think Parramatta at the moment are a bit unsure of themselves. I don't think it really sits comfortably with Dylan Brown being a leader of that group. And I think someone with a dominant voice like Gutho, people will respond to that. So I think it will help. Throw someone back to fullback. I think it might inject a bit more direction into the team, a bit more enthusiasm. Talangi goes back into his preferred position, I think, is fullback. It might be a better dynamic for them at this stage without Mitch Moses.
Got Sean on the line. G'day, Sean.
G'day, guys. How are you?
Yeah, good, mate. Go for it.
Hey, Moss, you mentioned before about the troubles at United. Mate, I'm a massive fan, as you guys know, but, mate, who wants to go and play there at the moment? Like, they can't make Champions League. They can't make Europa. They've got a squad that's fall apart at the seams. There's more to it than probably what we know. And Ten Hag just doesn't seem to have the draw power that, say, other coaches have had. Especially with, like, you take Fergie out of the equation. He was generational. He was a brilliant, best ever. But since then, the progression's been nothing but horrible.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I probably wouldn't just pin it on Ten Hag's lack of pulling power. I think it's Manchester United. More holistically, like there's big issues, systemic issues at the club, cultural issues at the club. So until that gets sorted, they're not going to be a destination for the top players in the world. And that's been a huge problem, because if you think about it, over the last few years, like any top name linked with a move to Manchester United hasn't ended up there.
No, so no one.
Big issues, mate. No. I feel for you at the moment, but I've been through plenty of pain with Liverpool over the years.
And I dare say
once the Klopp shine wears off, we may be in for some other tough. Well,
that's what I was about to say. So if you think of Ferguson leaving Man United and losing the shine of the club, Klopp being there, such a legend, moves on. If they don't get the right manager, they won't be a destination club, will they?
Well, that's right. And how long does it take for that shine to wear off? Like Wenger as well, when he left Arsenal struggled. It's a tough one. Like,
have they announced a new manager yet, Liverpool? No.
They went for Xabi Alonso, but he knocked them back and stayed where he was at Leverkusen. That was my point earlier too about Ten Hag. Like, Manchester United, Liverpool, Manchester City, they need top managers who have got charisma as well as, you know, the coaching ability and management ability.
But would one of those teams take a punt like Tottenham did with Ange? No.
I think
go with someone that is just off the radar. Not off the radar, but a good coach going through systems, winning in different competitions, but not the big name.
Well, we did it with
available.
Brendan Rodgers,
yeah.
Didn't we?
Yeah, we did it with Brendan Rodgers. Chelsea did it with Chelsea did it with Graham Potter. Graham Potter, who was doing
just
so
hasn't
well.
Worked. Doesn't work at those clubs.
It's really tough.
Yeah.
No. Thank you, though, Sean. And Shiraz actually test early asking who you think would be a good fit, and he mentions Zinedine Zidane. Would he be a good fit as Manchester United manager? Well, someone of that ilk is what they need, as you mentioned.
Yeah, Zidane was mentioned before Ten Hag got the role, and apparently Zidane knocked it back and said, "I don't want to come to the Premier League, not just Manchester United." So, who knows? But there's not a lot of top managers who are out of work. Like, so, prying them away from the club that they're at is difficult. But back in the day, Manchester United, the way they were. Mate, if Manchester United came knocking, if you're a player or a coach, mate, you were
straight there.
Mate, you were there without a doubt in the world.
Hello, Jamie.
How are you, boys?
Yeah, really good, thanks, mate. What have you got for us?
Mate, just a couple of things. The first thing, I heard you talking earlier about Quentin Ponga and his injuries and how he got the needle at halftime last week.
Kalyn Ponga, yeah.
I've been involved in the racing game and stuff like that, and we can't produce, you know, many performing enhancing drugs. So, I mean, if these blokes could get a needle at half time and come out and can run like a gazelle in the second half, is that, you know, now we're betting on the sport and stuff like that, is you know, is that really fair to the other team, or does it then come back onto the doctors like a duty of care that if that player goes out needled up and can't feel pain and runs through that pain and creates more damage, you know, then you're losing for longer, like, you know.
Understand what you're asking. I guess they're not performance.
They're not performance enhancing, but
they're pain.
What, yeah, well, I think it'd come down to more duty.
Well, if he can't run, he's improved his performance, hasn't he?
No, because you're not elevating him past a level that he would normally be at. He'd naturally be at. So that's all. That's the way I look at it.
Well, yeah.
But I suppose the duty of care is the one that might come back to bite people in years to come. Because of the damage that may occur after you've continually needled something. Now I don't know the situation up there, but I'm assuming the doctor would have said, well, mate, going on what we know about this injury, if you needle it, it's just going to numb it. You're going to do absolutely no more damage to it. Mm. You're right to go back out there and play if you can put up with being a little bit uncomfortable. Mm. And I think that's always been accepted in the game. But if you're getting needled and going out there at the risk of you can do more, I don't think you're doing it in regular games. You possibly do it, well, you would. You do it for a grand final.
Grand final, that's right.
Most definitely you would.
Thanks for the call, Jamie, and also Sean as well. Now, we're going to be debating the New South Wales number 6 jersey, I think, quite a lot in the next month. But this text from Dora the Free Pourer from Eleonora. Hey, Loz, what's your thoughts on the Queensland 6 jersey selection? Munster looks busted and has stated he'll only be 70% for the year. Is Mam a Queenslander? Yes, he is, isn't he? And
yep.
Is he a chance of being selected over Munster? As a New South Wales supporter, Ezra Mam and Rhys Walsh in the same team terrifies me. That's from Dora, the free pourer.
Yeah, I think Ezra Mam would be a very, very good choice if they selected him. I think they'll give Munster every opportunity to play. I agree with you. Munster's not playing anywhere near his best. If he's carrying an injury, that'd be something that Billy will consider. But I think the other guy that they'll look at is a bloke like Tom Dearden. Mm-hmm. Dearden played well in his only Origin game a couple of years ago. But Ezra Mann is certainly more dynamic than Tom Dearden. But Tom Dearden gives you everything you're looking for in an Origin player. Just competes hard. He's always in and around where the ball is. He chases, kicks. He puts his body on the line in defence, and he's just always at you and in the game. So I reckon if something did happen to Munster, he might be the one that gets the first crack instead of Ezra Mann.
Well, it's just a few days away now until LIV Golf takes over Adelaide and the Grange Golf Club. Limited tickets and hospitality options are still available for Friday and Sunday. Saturday's pretty much all sold out. We're broadcasting live from the course there on Friday ahead of day one of LIV. So we'll look forward to hopefully seeing a few of you there on Friday. It's golf, but louder. So don't miss this weekend of Shotgun Starts, Epic Weekend, Fun Village Fun, headline music acts, including Fisher Flight Facility, Tones and I as well. Just head to livegolf.com for more. And it's been great to have Mossy in this morning. Now, Mossy was telling me a story I'm going to get him to share with everyone. So, you know, football's taking you to some great places, Mossy. And I was asking you a question I always wondered because I was been watching a little bit of the Manchester City documentary and with Pep Guardiola, but I wonder particularly, say, Spain and Italy, where you got a mix of nationalities. And I was asking you, well, how does it work as far as what language does the manager use? And you've got players from multiple nationalities. Some, obviously, you don't all, might not all speak a common tongue. And you said that there are translators there at every session. So translators obviously go to the English players or the English-speaking players or the Italian-speaking players, etc., and translate for them on the run at training. Is that right?
Yeah. It's a key role, translator. I mean, some managers have, you know, multilingual skills,
sure,
of course, but yeah, where they need translators, I mean, that's a key part of the staff. Mm. And there's a lot of trust needed too, because the managers have to make sure their message gets through in the native tongue of the players and the player that they're talking to. So, yeah, huge role.
And on that, you then told me a story about when you came across the great Marcello Lippi, Italian and World Cup winning coach as well. Tell us that story.
Yeah, that was brilliant. Marcello Lippi was in charge of Guangzhou Evergrande, and when I was in charge of the Mariners, we played them home and away. And when we were over there in Guangzhou, after the game, shook his hand. They dusted us in the game, and his translator said, "Mr. Lippi is more than happy to have a chat with you after the game. If you want to go back to your dressing room, do what you got to do with your team. Come and knock on our door." So I did, because you know, as a young manager, getting the chance to speak to a World Cup winning Italian legend, too good to pass up. So I went over, knocked on the door. The translator comes to the door with Marcello, and the translator said, "Oh, let's walk out to the benches, the substitute benches, beautiful leather seats like you see in the English Premier League." So we sat down, and Marcello reaches straight for his suit jacket pocket, pulls out a tin of cigars and offers me one. And I said, "Oh, look, sorry, I don't smoke." And the translator said, "Take one and light it." So there I am pretending to smoke a cigar. And we had a good chat, half an hour, nuggets of gold galore from the great man, and through his translator. Didn't speak a word of English. But to get him to China, he doesn't like Chinese food. So he said, "I'll come on the proviso that you put an Italian restaurant at the training complex." So they built an Italian restaurant. They built an Italian restaurant at the training complex for him, and flew over and employed 5 full-time Italian chefs for the time that he was at Guangzhou.
It's called no expense spared, is it? Did you bring up the Grosso Lucas Neal incident?
Of course I did. Of course, I did. Penalty or no penalty? He said,
International language, mate.
That's it.
Use your hands. Everyone knows what you're talking about.
Coming up on Radio Tab, Steve Hewlett. Good morning, Steve. How are you?
No, I'm really well, thanks. Look, coming up shortly, we're going to talk to Simon Miller in a matter of moments about Amelia's and why the decision to go to Adelaide for the Goodwood, and then she'll make her way to Brisbane. But he's putting blinkers on her too. He's been dying to put blinkers on Amelia's duel for ages. So we'll just talk about that decision. Also, Graham Begg, Magic Time is heading towards possibly the Stradbroke handicap. So we'll get Graham. He's always got good horses, hasn't he, in his stable. Yeah. Graham Begg. We'll also talk to Maddie Smith. I don't know if anyone back did. Estefini in the studio where you guys are.
Anyone did.
What was that horse?
Estefini.
Oh, sorry.
Estefini or Fenny.
Yeah. We did.
You're joking.
Yes. I sent you a text message, Mido.
Each way. We got it.
Well, you're the only two people in Australia anyway. Sorry, Steve. Keep going.
That's all right. So we'll talk to Matthew Smith. He's not that very speedy, thrilled for a race in Brisbane on the weekend. And Bite Us Notches, I think, is a chance of heading to Brisbane as well for the carnival. So I want to grab Matty Smith. And also Pete Staples will join us. Just read the inevitable heading to Queensland for the Stradie. And Peter's good friend, Gary White, went out in a blaze of glory at Tassie on Sunday as well. So he's pulled the curtain down on his career in wonderful fashion, winning the last race. His last ever runner won on the weekend in Tassie, Gary White. So lots of news this morning.
Great stuff. We'll catch you shortly, Steve Hewlett. I'm going to let Mossy go to work. The poor bloke's got a full day of work ahead, don't you?
Yeah, of course, massive day. But before I go,
are you going to
hand over to DS?
Well, I was about to.
Well, just quickly, we've got Glenn Boss, we've got Ash Harrison, the ex-Queensland Rugby League player, and my brother John, listening in from Bonville this morning. They're about to
doing
tee
it tough.
Off.
Doing it tough on the golf course.
360 Underwriting Solutions annual golf day.
Okay.
That might have been a plug then.
Is that a plug?
Check in the mail. But, so shout out to Ash Harrison. He was a quality player.
Very good player, mate. He was one of those players, Ash, that a very good club player, but when he played at Origin, was an exceptional player.
Yeah.
Which, there's not many of those that sort of play well at club level, but then they get to Origin and just are a different player. He was one of those.
Dallas Johnson as well.
Dallas Johnson, another one. Like, there's a lot of them. Yeah. Nate Miles.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know, they just, you know, I can go further back, like a Bobby Lindner.
Yeah.
Like, Bobby he used Lindner. To just pull a Queensland shirt on and away he went. But Ash Harrison was, one of those type of guys.
Brilliant. Well, thanks for having
me.
No,
great. Good fun. Great to have you, Mossy.
Thank you, mate.
And
thanks a lot.
Play well.
Good on you, Mossy.
The boys are Bonville as well.
DS, you getting a whiff? Are you getting a whiff?
What was the company?
Yeah.
What was the company again? Because I'll tell you what, those insurance premiums are...
360 Underwriting Solutions, mate. Yeah. And I should talk good to my brother there. About, you know, a good deal for you. Surely
thank
you've
you.
Earned
yeah,
one
love
now,
one.
Middo.
That's it. Dave Stanley.
Hello,
loves
Middo.
A good deal as well.
Yes, always. Yeah. That's the commitment, see, of Mossy, that he comes in here early and then continues on. And what time are you knock off the Savo?
The Savo? 5:30? Try tonight.
Tonight?
Oh, it'll be dark.
He sends emails. He'll have meetings through
that's
the
what
day.
I mean.
Last week he commentated Zoom. A game.
The night before.
And then came in, did this, and then went to went to other work.
12:30 a.m. Got was in here at 5:15.
What a soldier.
Just a machine.
Commitment. Trooper. I wouldn't do just it if I didn't like the people I did it with.
I like it, yeah. 100%. 100%. I'm going to chat with Graham Big as well this morning. So I know he's going to chat with Steve Hewlett, but I'm going to chat with Graham. That's really interesting to hear that she is going to go to the Stradbroke because they had alluded that possibly if she was to pick up an Everest spot, magic time after winning the All Age, and she's been was competitive in the TJ, that maybe they might not look at Brisbane, but I tell you what, she would be very competitive if she went to Brisbane for a Stradbroke. We know how such a good mare she is, and she'd probably get in quite well at the weight. Also, too, I'm going to chat with Richard Callender this morning. Obviously, a lot of news floating around. There was an article from Ray Thomas this morning about the...
Yeah, the program.
Does the program need a freshen up? I'll ask Richie his thoughts on that.
I would love to see the slipper become part of the championships. I think that would be a great thing.
Okay.
So move it from Rose Hill. I don't
Rose Hill?
Know. We might have to rebrand some race days. I don't know. But I think having the golden slipper on day one of the championships and moving the size and the champagne, I know that might lengthen.
Jeez.
I know that might put things out of whack.
You know.
The
Middo
Golden
doing a bit
Slipper
of kamikaze.
Is right. The best race of the autumn in Sydney. The Golden Slipper is.
But you can't have the Golden
yeah,
Slipper.
Yeah, I know. At, I know. I'm not. I'm, throw, I'm throwing. Well, oh yes, I didn't even consider that actually.
Yeah, you can't.
Why did I?
What I would say to that is, why does the championships have to be 2 days?
Well, that's
could the championships be a 4 day?
Well, that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah,
that's what I'm getting at.
Could the championships be over 4 days? So could 2 days be at Rose Hill, day one and day two of the champs, day three and day four?
You could label day one slipper day.
So
day
4 weeks in a row.
4 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
Of just some go. Of the best horses as an idea, spitballing.
Yeah.
And then obviously too, you've got the Nathan Berry medal, which all the jockeys which compete for, and then maybe you could bring a trainer's medal into it because you're going to have a lot of different trainers.
Oh, that's just too confusing for me to think about.
Say,
it. 8:59.
I know.
Let me just say, the golden slipper should be at Rose Hill. But day one of the championships at Rose Hill on slipper day.
That's what we said, didn't we?
There we go. Yeah, there's an idea. Yeah. But you know what? There's also, too, a lot of people that would say, well, does anything need changing? It's all working beautifully at the moment. So we'll chat with Richard. We'll get on the text line 0419-767-272. We're in that good of a position that we can afford to talk about this.
Why don't we extend?
We can extend.
Just keep going.
Just keep going.
Just get all the good horses every week.
Just keep going and
just
going
keep
and going.
Going.
There's no, well, it's like that at the moment. Like, look at our spring, how deep our spring goes now. And you just continue to get good horses and good opportunities to have a bet. So, and more races for Foxy to run in.
Mate, we'll be,
Foxy's
we'll be
more scared Adelaide.
Yeah, what are you going to Adelaide for? I don't, you know. Mate, you know what you should have set that horse for? You know what you should have set that horse for? You either should have gone to Wagga for the Wagga Cup, which would have been enormous, and T-Bus could have pulled the string.
We want an easy kill.
Well, what about Scone? try and get her in the big dance.
Because beating Campioness for Encione is an easy kill, isn't it?
What about going to Scone for the Scone Cup, trying to get in the big dance? Because if you qualify in one of those couple of those races, you can then qualify for the big dance.
I don't do the planning.
You've got a lot of pull and sway there.
I just listen to T-Bus. In T-Bus, I trust.
But going to Adelaide.
Yeah.
Okay, what would you rather win, a race in Adelaide or would you rather win a Wagga Cup? What about a Wagga Cup?
Well, I'd like to win
a Wagga Cup.
Can you imagine winning a Wagga Cup?
I would like to win the Wagga Cup.
And then you could have gone eligibility for the big dance. You would have been down there already with work.
Well, now that you've said that.
100%.
That does make more sense.
And how much is the race in Adelaide
worth?
Well,
there's other owners too.
You get carried off
the
course.
There's other owners.
How much is the race in Adelaide worth?
I wouldn't have a clue.
It's a good race.
Is it a good race?
Yeah, it is. I think it's a $250,000 race.
Well, how much is the Wagga Cup worth?
$250,000? Yeah.
Anyway, boys, I'll talk to you later.
Everyone.
There you go. You'll be on the phone now, Loz.
I will be.
Wagga Cup.